And I'm going to turn this over to Pat and Peter. And could you just introduce everybody and give us a little intro as to what tonight's webinar is about, Pat? And Peter has all the intro if you want.
Right. Go ahead, Peter. You can do the intro quickly.
I'm going to read the first paragraph of everybody's intro so we don't spend too much time on resumes, just to give some context, and then you can take it from there. Does that sound okay?
Sounds perfect. You can even skip.
Right, so, we're not going to skip yours. You've had 41 years as a full-time clinician and educator in dentistry, respiratory medicine, and sleep medicine, extensive experience in clinical laboratory research and educational arenas. Has developed interdisciplinary care models, delivery systems used by physicians and dentists around the globe. That's an understatement for the impact that you've had. That's awesome. Richard Seymour, prior to retiring in 2016, owned and operated the Chronic Pain Solutions Center for 42 years. Came from an impoverished childhood with enamel hypoplasia. He lost 6-year molars early, arches collapsed, and developed TMD problems. That all allowed him to develop a burning passion for what he does. He's lectured to medical, dental, orthopedic surgeons, pain management specialists, and has led discussions on chronic pain and TMD disorders. Amalia Geller, board certified in adult and child neurology, board certified in sleep medicine, a diplomat of the American Board of Psychiatry and Neurology, and a diplomat of the American Academy of Sleep Medicine. Thank you, Dr. Geller, for being here. One of my favorite humans on planet Earth. Glenine Varga, a clinical sales specialist for Zoll Inamar Medical. She's been a certified TMD assistant with the American Academy of Craniofacial Pain and an educator with an AA in sciences. She's been employed in dental education for 23 years and has trained and assisted hundreds of dental offices on practice management, TMD, sleep apnea concepts, medical building, and team training. Take it away, Pat. You're muted, Pat.
Sorry, we just don't want Cubby attending. So, but thank you, Peter, for the great introductions and for being our fabulous PR person for AAPMD and Foundation for Airway Health. We just couldn't do a lot of this without you. We have a great panel of people on tonight. Short presentation by Dr. Seymour. Case presentation by Dr. Geller. Fascinating. My wheelhouse for the most part has been the emerging adult, which is the 19 to 29 year old. And the 19 to 29 year old presents really specific and different ways than any other female adults. So we're going to have an open discussion about how patients present and what we feel is our way to collaborate with our medical community and friends in a way that encourages them to partner with us as opposed to feeling threatened by what the new ideas are, and some of the ideas are that we bring forward. So it's all about taking care of our community of peers, as well as taking care of our community at large. So we have a quick presentation by Dr. Seymour, and how you want to put that on presentation mode, and you can go through the slides then.
All right. I don't know whether I have to change them for you or not.
I see a play button up here. If I hit play, it probably will just go through and I can just flip them as we go.
You do that.
And the rest of us will turn off our cameras while you go ahead and present your stuff.
And Richard, in 8 minutes, you're done.
Okay, I'm just looking for the play button to work here. And it's not doing it.
Okay, Howie, you go ahead.
I'll play it. I got it.
Thank you. Yeah, it's not worth it. Just go ahead and do it.
Okay.
So you see the second slide, women, double and triple men.
There's a tab that's come down on the top that is interfering with everything. Let me see if I can get that off. I don't know.
You can't because I'm in control. Just tell the story.
And can you hit play?
I it's on play.
No, I'm seeing the side slides. Okay, well, I'm excited to tell you about preventive healthcare for women and what we can do. The next slide. It's not going to the next slide.
All right, let me just, let's do it this way.
If I go to it on my screen, would it automatically, like, it was in the email from Patty. if I hit the play button from there, would that do it?
Richard, it won't work because you don't have controls. I have control.
Okay.
Just one. We'll do it like this.
Okay.
Now can you see this?
This is the third slide, not the second one. Give me the second slide. Women double and triple. Women double and triple men by 30 and 30 life-altering neurological disorders. Next slide. Just list them. Then it's just to give you a couple of them: chronic migraines, tension and morning headaches, Alzheimer's, dementia, fibromyalgia. These are that women double and triple men in these. We need to. This is not working. It's not going flowing. Give me the next slide. This nerve system right here is being left out of the evaluation of all of it. That blue nerve there is the chief sensory nerve of the brain, the trigeminal nerve. We need to call it the chief sensory nerve of the brain. The sensory nerves are nerves that send messages to the brain. Next slide. You'll see that, no, that's the fourth slide. There's one before that. There, you'll see that nerve, that blue nerve, is that large yellow ganglion you see there. This nerve supplies every tooth. This is what's important in this whole thing. And it travels throughout the entire brain and goes down to the third cervical vertebra. And we can control that nerve. Go to the next slide. The skeleton of the skull shows that the mandible is the only free-hanging bone that crosses the midline. That means that one crooked tooth or missing teeth or a dislocated TM joint can affect that huge nerve system. Go to the next slide. The next slide. The trigeminal nerve. Trigeminal means triple twins. Imagine trying to control triple twins. But because it crosses the midline and the teeth are the only exposed part of the skeleton, we can control all of that. Best if it's done when people are young. We can control airway as early as 4 and sleep. It needs to be diagnosed in the young. Next. It's really a structural engineering problem. The gears, if those gears are crooked or missing, that whole system doesn't work. Look over here. The teeth are two opposing mountain ranges or gears, and they're supposed to line up like the top down below. That would be me coming from a poor neighborhood and I lost my 6-year molars. It's not exactly me. But the point is, you see how everything shifts. And now the gears don't mesh. Well, this irritates that nerve 1,000 times a day. Keep going to the next one. Next. This is a list, and you can get this from the Academy. It lists all the things that are irrefutable. The teeth are the only part of the skeleton that comes through the through the tissue. They're the only part of the skeleton, along with the maxillary and mandibular and the TM joints, that are wired directly to the mainframe computer. Dentists are the only ones who can alter the teeth, and they're not on any healthcare teams in the world. And women need to know that they could do a self-exam. They've been doing this forever. Go to the next slide. Sorry, I'm rushing so much, but I expected to control these. You missed a couple slides here. I don't know. But anyway, Brendan Stack endorsed my book. These are irrefutable. You can go to the next one. Go down to the one you have.
I have a better idea, Richard. Without the slides, why don't you just tell the story about what you told me about why this is so important?
Tell you what I'll do. I'll put it on my phone. I'm going to push play and I'll go through and
I think I want you to just tell the story about why this is so important to you. And after all these years of practice, you still are such a strong, energetic, and passionate advocate for this. I think that'll be better than going through these slides.
Well, I'm passionate. This is 7 years into retirement. I had the problem myself. But when women lead men in double, triple time, 200 to 300% in 30 neurological disorders. How do you leave the largest of the 12 cranial nerves that I just showed you pictures of out of the equation? And so when you realize the mandible is the only bone, free-hanging bone that crosses the midline, and it's dictated to by all 32 teeth. Every one of them is here in the whole system. They are support pillars in the skeleton of the skull. And if that joint is dislocated or teeth are not lined up, they will irritate that nerve 1,000 times a day. And so Brendan Sachs said, he endorsed my book, which was Stop the Headache, A Cure for Recurring Headache. The number of people we couldn't cure their migraines in 42 years, you could count on one or two hands. And that included people that were just not compliant. But he said, Dr. Seymour arms women with the facts and gives them the weapons that they will need in order to evaluate themselves and go and find and talk to their doctors and ask why. Why was I never told?
Richard.
What?
Richard, how did you get involved? You went to dental school. How did you get involved in all this?
This is dental school never taught me a thing. I came from, like he said, like Peter said, I came from a poor background, lost my 6-year molars early. And so my bite collapsed and I had TMD early. I didn't know what it was. It wasn't until I got out of the service. And I even had gone to the Panky Man Clinic, and you know how prestigious that was at that time, back in the 70s. But they know this is the migraine generator for over 100 years, and it's still not being examined. You know, in America alone, there are 27 million women who have migraines. If you line them up shoulder to shoulder, they would line up from LA all the way to South Africa. If you compared them to cities, it would be every woman in Atlanta, Chicago, Dallas, Detroit, LA, and New York City. That's 27 million women. And no one is examining for this. And the World Health Organization estimates that there's over 1 billion in the world. And this is only one of the 30 neurological. If you lined up 1 billion women, it would go around the world 15 and a half times. We're talking something, this is got to be brought to the forefront. And I'm glad you're forming this arm of the organization. Is the medical costs for people with TMD are triple that of the norm, a non-TMJ patient. And women are 5 times more likely to have temporomandibular joint problems. Inpatient eye care, 4,300% higher in patients with TMJ. ENT problems, 3,300% higher. And no one has to look at this nerve. So it could be with a stethoscope, a millimeter ruler, and an index finger. This could be screened in 2 minutes by women themselves, and certainly by physician assistants with no problem. We have computers now that will tell us.
One of the things that you share with me, that you were part of a whole group of people from the Brendan Stack era back, maybe going back to 1970s or 80s,
yep,
who were treating people with miraculous results, who weren't getting better and all of a sudden were getting better. But it still never got out into the public where all this information became readily available to everybody. And as a result, women in particular, because they suffer more, weren't getting the care. And as you know, the average woman that comes to you with a problem, how many doctors have they seen before they come to you?
Oh, all my God. I'll give you one. One guy had literally had very good insurance and he saw 9 neurologists, 9. He had traveled around the world for help. And his teeth were so crooked, it's so obvious. But I mean, these people have seen tens of doctors, had testing, they're in financial destitute. My practice was 90% women. And so this, after I wrote my book, it drew me to write the article for the Craniomandibular Journal. But like you said, look how many of our friends, Howard, over the years have written books, texts, and whatnot. And this is still not in the mainstream of medicine. That's what drew me to this. It keeps me so passionate because it can't go on. There's a QR code I've got at the end of my slides that allows people to sign up for this. And it's part of the AAPMD program. And we need people to do that, to become part of this, because it's just, I mean, if we're offering everybody a chance to leave their footprints on healthcare history. I mean, it's that big. This would change all of healthcare.
And so the reason that we're even doing this webinar is because of you, because of your passion and your interest in these issues for women. And you, like a lot of the pioneers, were doing a lot of great work dealing with craniofacial pain. But I just want to fast forward. And Pat, can you unmute yourself, please? Come on, Pat, unmute yourself.
It's just Cubby is presenting too, so.
Okay, it's fine. We're used to our webinar door. So now, and so it wasn't really recognized, but then all the issues of airway, sleep, and breathing came along. And I remember having a conversation with the co-author of my book, GASP, Michael Gelb. I said, Michael, what percentage of TMJ patients do you think have an airway problem? And he said, man, 50%. And then a couple months later, it was 75, then 90. And we finally agreed 100% of people have an airway problem. So it's not only chronic pain, but it's airway, sleep, and breathing. So maybe this would be a good time to have Dr. Geller present her case, mm-hmm. Are you in Nevada now?
No, not currently right now. I'll kind of go through the case quickly and leave some thoughts, and then I'm going to have to leave this clinic.
Okay. Right, you want to share your screen and then you can let me make sure you can do that. Hold on a second.
Myself on the screen. I see you too. Can you see me?
I can see you, but let me make sure that you can share your screen.
And I'm doing this on a phone. I'm not on a computer.
You have your slides on a phone?
No, I have no slides. I'm just going to talk.
Okay, and go ahead.
Talk. Okay. So we were going over a possible case where it might involve sort of bias that we have with women patients. And I was telling her that I recently had a case, actually it was back in October, of a young woman who came to me with persistent wakefulness, and she was postpartum. And when she came to me, she was really hysterical. And, you know, the optics of that was, you know, sort of a histrionic type presentation, you know, keeping in mind that, you know, she's postpartum, and it was really easy to kind of write this off. But like anything, you know, your real diagnosis is made with history. And where I trained at University of California, San Diego, in neurology, that was our mantra that, you know, you can do all kinds of tests and, you know, but the history, you know, 90% of your, immediately I kind of had my bias with it. I said, I'm going to listen to this lady because I think there's something going on. So as we delved into her history, evidently, you know, during the first trimester, she had gotten COVID. It was a very mild infection, not very symptomatic, and there was no placed on high risk because of that. And she didn't go through any kind of medication. So second trimester was fine. And then in third trimester, she was preterm, which is a little unusual for a first time pregnancy. So it was about a couple of weeks after delivery, you know, she was home, kind of back and forth with the sleep-wake cycle was becoming rather erratic. And then when the baby came home, then she had the baby sitting with him being up, and her husband was trying to be as supportive as he could. So I remember, you know, trying to kind of just, you know, calm her down, that this is okay, you're going to be all right. But she was really hysterical, and I thought she was going to have a nervous breakdown. And at that moment, I remember looking at her and saying, you know what? Listen to her. Listen to what she's trying to tell you. So I had to take away that bias and say, okay, Josie, what do you think is going on here? And then she started saying all these things about her house and mold and these things that she had looked up. So I said, well, that's interesting. You know, maybe there's something to this. So then I tried to look at this analytically and say, okay, well, what neurotransmitter are we really dealing with? And it's histamine. So I said, you know, why don't we get a histamine lump and see what's going on? And I'm thinking already now, COVID long hauler, you know, are we starting to see some data now coming out that, you know, persistent wakefulness could be some residual damage? Well, I was really shocked to see the histamine level was so high. It's like, wow, I wasn't expecting that. And so that was kind of a wake-up call for me as a physician, as a female physician, that, you know, even female physicians can kind of, you know, sort of bias against other women that, oh, they're only emotional, you know, it's histrionic. And but I think what I've learned from this is that, you know, listen to your patient, that the diagnosis is in the history, no matter how they're presenting and how irrational they may be or over emotional, you know, just try to go beyond that screen and listen to what they're telling you. Because every patient has something to teach you. And one of the famous, kind of to paraphrase a very famous neurologist in stroke, Dr. Lewis Kaplan, he said, we learn about stroke by stroke patient. And that's really the way it should even be with sleep medicine, that everything we learn about sleep and understanding of sleep is through our patients. So where we are now with this lady, she underwent a sleep study and it was unremarkable, an in lab. And I've been following her histamine levels. They're trending upward. I've got her into immunology. It looks like she has mastocytosis. So she's got some type of mast cell involvement that's you know, releasing the histamine. But it makes sense why she goes through these. There's like cyclic periods of wakefulness. And also, I had her do a sleep diary, you know, keep on with this. It's sort of continuous. We're trying to track it to her menstrual cycle, because of course her menstrual cycle. Hi, come on in. Are you getting ready to leave? Oh, hold on just a minute.
Do you know the copy of the code?
I don't know that code. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, no problem. So anyway, there does seem to be a link that this is around a couple days into her period it starts. So we're still working on coming up with a diagnosis. I'm waiting for the MRI to come back. If there's no contraindication, I'm going to go forth with a lumbar puncture. I'm going to look at hypocretin. I'm going to look at, maybe could this be, you know, I mean, low-grade limbic encephalitis can present really, really bizarre ways. But she was a real good case. And I've seen so many women suffering from the chronic fibromyalgia, chronic fatigue syndrome. And so often they're just kind of, you know, they're put on duloxetine and, you know, adios. And duloxetine is a really nasty drug on neurotransmitters. I don't like it. But I think we really need to have, in my opinion, we need to have more empathy for women, because sometimes I think the way we're brought up, maybe it's cultural, maybe it's genetics, that women are wired differently than men. We express ourselves differently. We are definitely more verbose than men. I mean, my husband tells me that all the time, you know, talk, you know. So we have to learn to understand that, you know, women are different. and try to have empathy and try to listen is the key. And we may learn something, we might be able to help them. Mm-hmm. And I really hope that we're going to be able to help this young woman. It's not type of mast cell involvement. So, oh, it's sparse postpartum depression and blown it off, which I saw my other colleagues in that boat to do that with her. We would have never looked at histamine. We would have never diagnosed probably the mastocytosis. And so she for me in my career was a learning lesson.
So Amalia, I'm on vacation. And so I go to the gym and I've been watching reruns of this old TV show called House. Mm-hmm. And I'm listening to your presentation. And now I'm thinking about the episode I watched of House where you, as you unpeel the onion and you look a little bit further, you find more information that's valuable, you know, and somebody could have mast cell activation or something, but it could be related to a sleep problem or not related to a sleep problem. That there are so many things to think about. And I know that you also do a lot with sleep. And I have found, and see if you agree, that a lot of women really don't have high AHI scores, but they have arousals, they have upper airway resistance. And so they get pushed aside. Well, you don't, really don't have apnea, so they look somewhere else. But they really, neurologically, and the effects on the physiology and autonomic nervous system might be the same.
Mm-hmm. You agree? I've seen with at least, you know, the women that are coming in for, you know, and I do anywhere like 15 new intakes a day for new patients for possible breathing disordered sleep. And of those women, usually in my intake assessment, they meet all criteria for sleep disordered breathing with their airway exam, potentially with weight. When they come back for sleep studies, I have personally have not seen that. I've seen a lot of women with sleep apnea. And always keep in mind that the home test can underestimate the AHI. So that's from my experience. And, you know, I've been doing sleep medicine since 2008. I haven't really seen that. I mean, I've seen women with pretty bad sleep apnea. I think they do present, interestingly, more with insomnia as a symptom versus excessive daytime sleepiness. And my theory behind that, I think, again, is because the way hunting, the woman was in the cave taking care of the children, cooking, whatever, and had to multitask. So it had to be in this constant hypervigilant state. Okay. So women, I find those, especially with the worst sleep apnea, they have really, it can't go to sleep because it's going to have pretty bad sleep apnea. Whereas men, I mean, when they have the sleep apnea eye scales, you know, they're the ones that are like the Pickwickians, you know, they're kind of constantly falling asleep on the couch with the clicker in the hand. But women are forced to constantly, you know, be taking care of things, multitasking. That's been my experience.
That's great.
I agree that that's mine as well.
Are you okay? Do you have to leave so you don't get locked in the clinic?
Yeah, I think that's it. But is this going to be recorded? Because this sounds just so wonderful. Such gifted and talented people at this meeting, and that I never heard of this organization. And I'm like, goodness, this is such a wonderful group of people and a eclectic group of people.
And I love the life you've led.
Yeah, it's very interesting. I think that now that we've got you, we're not going to let you go, and we'll get you on.
I love learning from you all.
I do understand we've intruded on your time. So.
Oh no, it was really busy today. I did about 15 new intakes for sleep medicine, and that doesn't even count the sleep studies that need to be read. And so we spend an hour on a new visit for a patient. And I would like to share something. I'm sure a lot of you all are very familiar with this part of sleep medicine. I'd like to share it before I go. One thing that I incorporate when I do sleep intakes is I really try to pay attention to that airway exam. And, you know, and I really have to thank my friends in the dental field for educating me more about this, of understanding the dental arches and dentition and all that. I let all my patients, new patients, listen to that video. I think it's about 6 years old now, of Dr. Tom Colquitt talking to the AARD. And it's that little video, I Can't Breathe, From Inflammation to Wellness. And I can honestly tell you that is just, it just blows people's minds. They come into the sleep visit and, you know, I'm not trying to throw them into a sleep, you know, machine, but I want them to understand what's happening. And I want them to understand about malocclusion and the potential cutting edge stuff of new devices coming out for bone cells, you know, stem cell stimulation, that we can grow bone. And it may not be a permanent fix for sleep apnea, which I don't think for people with severe it would ever be, but certainly it's a great adjunct to help. And I also want to just end with, the whole dental aspect of sleep medicine was never really on my radar till last year, until I underwent Vivos, and because I have sleep apnea. And unfortunately, the Vivos device, I think it has a place, and there's certain people that can benefit from it. I personally found I would not recommend it for people who grind and clench, which is, I'm in that category. I fractured a root canal, and $1,700 later after oral surgery, realized I can't go into a Vivos device. From there, that led me to discover Dr. Belfer, Theodore Belfer, and the work with the unilateral homeoblock and preventive oral device. And from there, Dr. Colquitt, and then, you know, just understanding more about, we can grow our face, we can grow bone. And I really believe that is going to be the direction in the future for dentists, sleep dentists, and sleep medicine physicians to be working side by side in the clinic. That after they see the sleep medicine physician, you go next door, now you're with the sleep dentist, and we're going to be doing those scans, and we're going to be really looking at the malocclusion, the problems in people's airways. And I'll end on this note. When I met Dr. Belfer and he gave me a visit, he said, "Dr. Geller, I want you to start taping your mouth when you wear your CPAP machine at night." And I thought he was a little bizarre, you know, I didn't know what to think of that. But I said, okay, I'm gonna listen to him. He's the expert here in this one. So I started taping my mouth, you know, using my full face CPAP mask. And I was shocked that for 2 weeks, I went through unbelievable REM rebound, which tells me that despite the fact that I'm using my CPAP, I'm not getting restored to sleep. That's right. And that REM rebound was because I was sleep deprived, even using CPAP. And I'm convinced that taping your mouth and your on sleep, you know, CPAP device is critical. We must teach our patients, you know, functional breathing. We've got to learn how to use our tongues. This is so critical in sleep medicine. And as in my sleep training, and my colleagues that I work with, it was not on our radar. It really wasn't. It's all about the P-crit, you know, opening up that space back here. But it does you no good if you open up the P-crit, but you can't breathe.
So,
and that's probably it.
Although this is our first experience together, you just gave a wonderful description of the purpose of why we exist as an organization, to bring those two parts together. I look forward to having maybe another webinar with you, that a pediatric neurologist who discovered the value of dentistry. We need more people like you to help build these bridges between medicine and dentistry. So I thank you for putting us into your busy day, and hopefully you're not locked in there till the morning.
I hope not. But I want to thank you all. It was such a wonderful opportunity to meet you. And I really look forward to collaborating. And my other colleagues are very interested in learning more about the organization as well.
And hopefully that if this webinar gets people interested and excited about being part of a group that focuses on how do we focus on the problems that women have, then you will be part of that.
That would be an honor. I appreciate that. Thank you very much. And I hope to meet everyone.
Great.
Soon. Thank you. Good night.
So, Pat, can we go to Glenine and let Glenine tell us a story?
Sure. She's having a hard time getting on. Hopefully she is.
There she is.
I think in terms of also, you know, we're staying on top to wait just so we can bring this around too. We need to understand as a group and as providers that access to care is a really big issue for women, especially underserved women. And so how we deal with sleep and breathing disorders and neurological deficit, tongue motion, all of these things, it comes to us as a group to find a way that we can provide access to care in a meaningful way for the folks that we serve. And one of those things that we do is by listening to the patients as when they come in, listening to their story, trying to understand that not every patient comes from the same place. They present differently. They have a different emotional and psychosocial presentation. And so what we're trying to do is to encourage all of our fellow providers to start looking at especially women and young women in a different way. And so Glenine has a great story because much of what we understand about her story and her trajectory had to do with being unrecognized by the providers that treated her. So I'll let you take it from here and then we can open it up for some Q&A.
Thank you, Dr. McBride. And I apologize ahead of time if I have any technical difficulties because I've had technical difficulties this entire hour and I haven't had the enjoyment of being able to hear everybody and what you've been saying. But I do want to thank Dr. Seymour for presenting that real quick synopsis of where you're at because it was you at the AAPMD that really got my light bulb to go off because I have been suffering with pain since I can remember. In fact, I have a picture over here that I sent to Dr. Seymour of me at 16 years old at my first school dance with look at that forward head posture and major headaches and major pain I was having because at, you know, 13 years old, I had my bicuspids extracted as I was told that I was I had buck teeth and all of these issues. And so I've been suffering with pain since then. And, you know, I was lucky enough to be in this industry and know the right people and be able to reverse the bicuspid extraction situation to get all of my teeth in place and get my implants in place. But unfortunately, even after the expansion, I still didn't really pay close attention to my occlusion. And so I've been suffering with my occlusion and my TMD not functioning, my TMJ not functioning correctly. And it was Dr. Seymour that I sat down with that really painted the picture to bring me to remember what I had learned with the American Academy of Craniofacial Pain in that occlusion and our cranial joint, our cranial nerves all play a role. And so with me, I may not have a major airway issue per se. I don't have a very high AHI. I do have a high RDI. I do have upper airway resistance syndrome, but a lot of my issues now are the malocclusion and the clenching and the grinding. So I love that Dr. Seymour is available to pull together the interest in regards to occlusion and how pain results, especially in women, as we've been talking about. And I love the fact that I was able to find Dr. Geller. She is local here to me in Henderson, Nevada, and she's been working really closely with me and my father in regards to a lot of the epilepsy and issues he's been having. So I'm so excited that she's passionate about this topic and that we can bring the two of them together. And thank you so much, Howie. And thank you, both Dr. Hinden and Dr. McBride for allowing us to have this platform to maybe brainstorm and bring everyone together in one space to maybe do something to change this. Because at, 13 years old, when I was presented with extracting my teeth, I never in a million years could have seen the future of what I would have been suffering with. And I never in a million years would have been able to understand that I have been in a position to change it, but I don't want this to happen to others. And as Dr. McBride mentioned, we have the opportunity to go to the underserved and at least educate what's going on. So I beg of you all to listen and see what we could do to move this forward, maybe create, as Dr. Hinden explained, a side group to focus on women, because we don't fall under what, you know, Dr. Geller was talking about, that the Pulikian syndrome and being big and having all of these airway issues. We fall more under the insomnia and the clenching and the pain and all of that that Dr. Seymour was talking about. So hopefully we can pull this together and do something great.
So Lynn, I met you about 12, 13 years ago at one of the very first AAPMD conference we've ever had. You were working for Nierman at the time. And you're quite a lovely, vivacious young woman. I think you were a little bit older than 13 at that time. I have watched the changes and every time I go to a meeting, I say, look at my braces, look what I just had done. I just had my implants put in. And you went through a lot. Are you much better off now than you were 12 years ago?
1,000%. I mean, just the fact that I can look over my shoulder and actually see, I don't have that forward head posture that I had back then. I don't have those chronic headaches that I had. So I'm definitely in much, much better position, but I'm still fine tuning. Let's call it fine tuning. And that's exactly what Dr. Seymour is talking about when he's talking about occlusion and making sure that we're functioning correctly. And so that's what I love about it.
And the goal would be that at 13, things were done correctly. And so you never would have to go through all that. So Peter, could you unmute yourself for a minute?
Also, I think one of the things all of us need to understand, especially with sleep and breathing or breathing disordered sleep patients, I show Tom Colquitt's video to a lot of patients, to a lot of my patients, not only is because he's part of the fabric of my life, but also because it's the message that we want. Even though he's a sweet old guy, it's still a message that resounds and resonates with everyone. But
he's not a sweet old guy. He's younger than I am, so he's definitely
like a heartbeat younger.
I just want to add, Peter sort of Peter. If you don't know Peter, he's the head of this marketing company, Medrose Media. Does a lot of work. He's doing does our website for we're doing our website for the AAPMD. So we want to market this. We want to get the message out. Richard Seymour has been working on this for years, and he's so frustrated because it's difficult. Do you have any thoughts that you can offer us and our audience? And I want to know who of our 100 plus attendees are willing to be part of a group that will work on how do we get the message and help women have better equity, healthcare, equity and equality, and get better and quicker treatment. So people like Lenine can not get the wrong treatment, then have to get the right treatment and get it sooner. So your thoughts, Peter.
Yeah, thanks very much, Dr. Seymour and Dr. McBride. And Lenine, it's good to see you. It's always good to see you. I think, I was at Kaiser today. I'm a Kaiser member, and I was doing some preventative health stuff, and the Breast Cancer Foundation was there, and the table was staffed by women, and they were telling stories about women. And the Breast Cancer Foundation essentially took the shame out of mammograms. And I think from what I'm hearing Dr. Seymour say, and what Dr. Geller said, in my experience, my client base now is over 80% women. And I think a lot of, especially what Dr. Geller said of, we're going to put women in a box because of how they present their story from a communication style perspective and start to take a bias toward the symptoms that they're telling us about. we did the same thing with breast cancer, where because it's a part of the body we don't like to talk about, we kind of put it off in a corner. Now that seems completely insane. But back then it was revolutionary. For whatever reason, we don't want to talk about women's jaw joints. We don't want to talk about glenine. If that was a famous man that said, hey, since I've been 13, I've been completely compromised because I didn't get proper medical care. Yeah. I think we've got a different outcome here. So, you know, I'm very much an intuitive marketer and a storyteller and a message, a guy who likes to share the message from the heart. I think we have a tremendous gender bias here that's working against the cure to these problems. And I can see Dr. Seymour nodding his head. And I think what we need to do is find a platform where women can tell their stories about head, neck, and jaw pain, similar to the way they told their stories about breast cancer and their experience there. And I think if we do that, we can make, you know, the road has been paved for us in the past by the folks in the breast cancer movement. And it's no different. Why was it that we didn't want to talk about breasts? Who made that rule up? Half of the population has them. Right. And when I say it, it's still a little uncomfortable, but that's the communication issue. And now we don't want to talk about women with headaches and jaw pain because they're really just stressed out and crazy. No, they're not. That is not the problem. With the exception of my, no, I'm kidding.
No. We're not going there.
I think so. That my short answer is I think those stories need to be told, and we need to benchmark other organizations who have brought to the forefront challenges that women are facing uniquely from the perspective of this right. Webinar. I'm you know, Reza Movahed would say that I need to get in line for jaw surgery, and I'm a guy. That's not this webinar, though. This webinar is talking about women, and I think gender bias is a big part of it. The way you get through that is present women's stories the way the Breast Cancer Foundation did, as sisters, mothers, grandmothers, aunts, etc., and humanize the issue and stop saying because women are talking about it, it must not be as big of a deal as it really is.
Well, and one of the biggest things that we need to realize is when we're dealing with a medical system that is based on algorithmic presentation. So if you don't fit the algorithm, you don't fit.
But Pat, I think from a storytelling perspective,
presentation, and ergo, they don't fit. Okay, you have sleep apnea, we're going to give you CPAP and blah, 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 or whatever, that there, most women that present, most of the young women that I see, especially the emerging adult women that I see, they don't present in an intuitive way that would be considered intuitive. So I'm always looking for what else is out there. You know, a lot of primary care physicians don't even test for vitamin D. They don't even test for A1C levels. They don't even test for a lot of things that these women are packing around as part of their systemic baggage that, you know, they don't have. Of course, they're not going to desaturate and have apnea as we would expect them to. So ergo, you don't fit for what I'm going to do in my office. So having care providers who are going to look outside the box and say, I'm going to put you in the center of my wheel. You are the focus of my attention and your problems. I'm going to sift through these problems and we're going to put a hierarchy of needs here. And then we're going to work through each one of those and find something that fits your presentation and also fits psychosocially with who you are and where you are in your world. Treatment needs to meet you where you are. And I think it hasn't happened yet.
Pat, my buddy Michael Gelb says, men are in denial and women talk in riddles. So a man comes into practice and said, I said, why are you here? He said, my wife says I have a problem. And, you know, it's never their problem. Somebody told them they had a problem. And women, if you want to talk, you have to unmute. You're in denial, Richard. But and women are in denial that, and we look to interview somebody in order to get to do the treatment that we do, whether it's orthodontics or appliances or myofunctional therapy. But as Dr. Geller said, there's so much going on. There could be a neurological problem. There could be something else going on.
Can you hear me now?
Do you want to say something?
Yes, I did. Yes.
But just hold on 1 second. And so the women take longer to tell their story, but it's only after they tell their story and you get more information that you can get more information at the beginning of the treatment and provide more complete treatment. Richard, what do you want to say?
Well, I'd like to add the Glenine story and Pat's in young women. If you can imagine 13-year-old woman turning with puberty and whatnot, and throughout all these ages, and widows, single moms can't afford this treatment. They are the underserved, no question. But guess what else kicks in at age 13? I mean, the 12-year molars just came in. The cuspids just came in. No one is checking to see whether guidance systems are working. You know how many girls are condemned to a lifetime of migraines and they're blaming it all on their hormones? That nobody has to look in the mouth at all. And it affects their sleep. It affects their energy. And like Peter was saying, there no one's looking. No one, this is a three-dimensional puzzle that we have computers now that'll help us balance it perfectly. But nobody's using them. We're still using carbon paper. We can examine this. I've got one slide there if you can find it. I don't know what number it is, but it shows about four different mouths that scream, that absolutely scream that the bite, this three-dimensional puzzle of the upper teeth that don't move and the gears that are supposed to mesh. Okay. I've got a skull here that I can show you. Richard. What happened when, if you just have, oh, it just dropped. If you have just one tooth too high in the mouth, okay, a crooked tooth will do this same thing. But I want you to see how it disturbs everything. Okay. You hit that dark tooth here, okay?
You have to.
Can you see it? And when you back, you look at how it, the joint and you everything. Have to
move back, Rick, you move back a little so people can. Yeah.
There.
Good.
Okay. One tooth. So you know how many people have one crooked tooth? But if you have a dislocated joint, it's literally 2 millimeters from the floor of the brain, and absolutely no one has to look. And don't tell Peter, do not have surgery on his jaw. He should spend an hour talking to me before he does anything like that. And it's such an inaccurate thing. So you can correct it with occlusion. And if I had more time, and if we form this group, I would like to spend time showing people all that we can do by just correcting the engineering of the bite. And if you wanted to test airway, just have the patient pull their jaw back. It's kind of like tightening the balloon, the neck on a balloon. You'll hear snoring, you'll hear all the noise. Then have them jut their jaw forward and you'll see how much clearer they breathe. We can make appliances. If all of medicine did was do a 2-minute screening, we can teach women how to do this themselves. But Class 2 malocclusions, look how many of them have airway problems. It's because the mandible's so far back that the airway is impinged. We can move that mandible forward. Janine is actually breathing very rare air. How many people do you know who could have had bicuspids extracted and had the courage or the finances to be able to have the entire mouth move forward and had implants put in for all four bicuspids and is still having to get the occlusion lined up and balanced? How many, that's rare air. Most people don't have the courage to do it.
Richard, thank you. So, and Pat is always make sure that we stay within our time limit. But I've gotten a bunch of people who say they want to be part of this, they want to participate in this. And
great.
We have we have on our screen five people who are committed to make this happen, and who will be part of that. And we have a great marketing people person in Peter and Mad Rose Media, who I'm volunteering, who can help us craft a message that'll go out.
I would love to have, work with Peter too, if I could.
Maybe if you're good, we'll let you do that. But,
thank you, Albert.
But we have almost 100 people I haven't heard from. You have a practice. You're successful. You're doing good work. You know the benefits that you're able to give people. But I believe we have to do more. We have to be activists. We have to go out into the world and make sure that everybody can have access to this care. Because if somebody like Lenine, all she needed was a screening and a different direction, she could have avoided needing this. And it's only because she was in the field that she even knew about this information. Otherwise, she would be still stuck in this prom queen, head forward position kid. So
can you show the QR code I have on the slide there? That is your QR code for them to sign up with the AAP.
Could you let me just run the meeting and I'm going to give anybody who wants, Patty, make a note. We'll send everybody this, all your slides. So they'll see the slides. And if they have any questions about any of them, they can contact you. What I want in the few minutes we have left, I want everybody to make a commitment. Put in the chat box. You want to be part of this. You want to help make a difference. You want to get the message out to women, mothers, that the problems that you're having, don't overlook an airway, breathing, sleep, or TMJ problem that may be unrecognized. The screening, as Richard says, takes 2 minutes. What does it hurt to have the screening? If you rule it out, you move on to something else. But don't miss that, because it'll save you decades of grief. I'm done. Pat, last words?
I think, we welcome everybody to come back again. We will have Dr. Seymour back for a singular lecture on the women in craniofacial pain. And, there are access to the slides. Like we said, there's lots of information out there. A panel discussion has a tendency to kind of go into the weeds here and there. We hope you understand and hopefully can appreciate that we'd like to have everybody's voices heard that are on the lecture. And moving forward, if you have questions or concerns, don't hesitate to contact us and we will get back to you. So thank you for attending. Please come back again. We'd love to see you for some of our future webinars, and we look forward to seeing you again. So have a nice evening.
Thank you so much for being part of this. And thank you, Richard and Peter, as always. And I like what you said about what you learned about breast cancer and how we can follow in that lead. So I think this is a really good beginning. And I look forward
to... Please have Peter call me.
What'd you say?
Please have Peter call me.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.